Welcome to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust, covering car culture and the automotive world with Shane Osborne, Brady Wright, and Steve, the producer, Johan. Let's see what's up this week.
Hey, and here is what's happening Tuesday, March the 5th, 2019, on the 75th anniversary episode of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
75 episodes.
Yeah, and we're getting closer and closer to
the
YouTube channel.
Here, as usual, just oozing class and sophistication, yours truly, Brady Wright. Master mechanic and metal butcher Shane Osborne here on the other side of the table, oozing class and something.
Black goop.
I'm sorry. You can see the goop Gojo hand cleaners over there. And, of course, Steve, our producer, Johan, who's busy cataloging his entire collection of gear shift knobs over in the corner.
Very good.
Yeah. Back to the blacktop first. What?
Well, I'm giving hand signals to
Shane
over there. Wait till we have the video and everybody's going to go, what is he doing there? Yeah,
he's nothing. He waves his hands around. You should be here, folks. Seriously. In the Palatial Studios, he waves his hands around randomly all the time, handing us notes and everything, which Shane and I studiously completely ignore. We have paid no attention to him whatsoever. And somehow or another, in an hour, we do stuff. I think you're right.
It
amazes me sometimes. We have, as usual, some really cool happenings in the automotive world.
I got one. Tesla's been kicked out of China.
They're no longer
allowed to sell cars in China.
We're busting our non-Tesla
due to
thing?
Inconsistencies in building.
Inconsistencies in building. Tesla?
Tesla.
So now...
They're not going to allow them to import them into China.
They're going to go to Mumbai.
Well, I find that very interesting because there's some other things, but we're not going to use their name. You know that.
It says Steve's not allowed to say Tesla.
Yeah, it doesn't say.
That's right.
Steve that can. No. So when did this happen? I'm fascinated.
I just saw the news clip this yesterday. So.
Really?
Well, if I had done my my extra special place where I go to get the latest news, I would have probably popped up.
It popped up on my feed.
I just noticed up at the local grocery store where they've got the Tesla charging stand aisle. Outside by the gas station.
Lots of parking?
There's lots of parking, but they are, surprisingly, a lot of electric cars out there, many of Teslas, but I think their system, their hierarchy, their little plug works for a lot of the electric cars.
Well, you would hope that everything would go universal everything.
Oh, please.
No, they're going to sell adapters.
It's the micro USB.
Yes, you got to buy our adapter to use this port.
Right. Electricity is free. The adapter is $5,000.
Oh, gosh. I think that's how they're going to end up working all this. Well, for those lucky enough to attend this week's 89th edition of the Geneva International Motor Show held in the snowy Switzerland, what's really cool is it attracts thousands of journalists, executives, and other industry types and has over 900 cars.
Wow. Yes, that's
and I was cars. Thinking maybe someday when we're making lots of money on this show, I can be invited and pay my way to go there.
Yeah, we can rent a cattle car and take passage to Geneva.
Yeah.
We're working our way on a tramp steamer.
Yes, we're going to be there in 3 weeks.
We're sitting here with our card table just outside the front door. We can't afford to get in, but we
can hear the noises underneath. It's worth it. So anyway, they've got a large thing going on over there, and one of the cars that they are showing up is the new Aston Martin has finally pulled the wraps off their AM-RB003, and it is insanely fast, over 1,000 horsepower. Drivetrain is able to launch from 0 to 60 in less than 3 seconds, which is that really magic number. It features a hybrid electric system paired with a turbocharged V6, incorporates a kinetic energy recovery system developed for the F1 race car. And by the way, guess what the RB stands for, guys?
What's that?
An energy drink?
Ridiculously...
Red Bull.
Fine.
Red Bull Advanced Technology, the makers of Red Bull Energy Drink. And I have seen that in the past, but yeah, they have a whole side of their business, which is nothing but technology and for cars and stuff. So I think that's really cool. But anyway, over 1,000 horsepower, and it's a hybrid between electric and...
I got one to beat you. I wasn't going to go here, but I'm going to
do it
now.
Elephant.
No. Let me just say one word. The word is Bugatti.
All right? Oh.
Everybody knows. There's nothing. I don't have to say anything else. They have now come out with a new limited production, oh my gosh, car. I can't remember the name of it. I just saw the video. It is a $5.8 million car. Okay.
Okay.
We'll get a matching pair. $5.8 million. It's got a 1,500 horsepower powertrain. It is idiotically fast, over 200 miles an hour. They're only making 20 of them. And here's my favorite part. They unleashed it. I mean, unleashed it today. And they had the video of the, you know, how cool this thing is. And right. It's all swoopy and low to the ground and everything. 20, only 20, $5.8 million. All 20 are already sold.
Oh, of course. Of course.
Oh, yeah.
And the guys that are buying that.
Probably within minutes.
Well, and the guys that are buying that, they probably will buy one of these, too. They'll just park them next to each other in their garage.
It'll be in the living room of their penthouse in Dubai or something. I mean, it's just crazy. It is a gorgeous car. I mean, it's a Bugatti, let's face it. You know, they don't make anything wrong. Yeah, but $5.8 million.
Isn't that amazing?
Yeah.
Just amazing.
They're hand-built to precision.
Yeah.
Well, people pay $100,000 for a custom motorcycle.
Yeah, by the way, do you know what it costs to change the oil on the Bugatti, the Chiron?
About $1,500.
No, $21,000.
Oh!
That's an oil change.
Ouch.
I thought, so you have to pull the whole car apart? Apparently, you do. Because there's no way to get at any of it. And, of course, you can't do it with your hand tools in the garage at home.
That's right.
No, you take it to Bugatti, and they sit there with their velvet tracksuits and their white gloves.
Let's face it. There's always the uber rich, and they can afford these kind of things. And the rest of us, we wish we could.
If your Uber guy shows up in one of those, you know he's doing all right.
Exactly.
Well, and speaking of normal guys like us, there is a really cool concept VW vehicle. Guess what it is?
Oh, wait.
Truck.
No.
I've seen this. Go ahead.
It's called an ID buggy.
Yeah.
It's a electric dune buggy.
Yes.
Really? Literally looks like right out of the 60s.
Yes.
Huh. And flexibility of VW's new battery electric.
I know. You should know this.
I know.
Oh, man. It is cool. And I'm like looking at this. I'm like, they've got to do some kind of a takeoff of the Steve McQueen movie where they're racing around in the dune buggy at the beginning of the movie.
Oh.
And they got to do something like that in a new, more modern kind of version of kind of put his face on it, and it's got that. I could just imagine, and that would be a great ad, and it would.
It would be. They could CGI some.
That's exactly
McQueen's
right.
Face on somebody's.
That would be good.
Driver. That would be cool.
And I thought that was the first thing that flashed in my mind, and I thought they'll sell these things because.
Oh, sure.
Oh yeah.
And maybe Texas will accept them too, because remember Texas said no dune buggies, so maybe this will be accepted.
Well, but maybe
it's electric car.
Sure. Yeah.
Definitely, California's going to accept it.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and they got the dunes, though. That was in
yes,
the beaches.
Do. Well, Oregon's got dunes.
And
we
Oregon,
got dunes.
Too. So, anyway.
Our dunes are covered with barnacles.
You'll have to look it up. Look it up. maybe they'll have some video out there on that. It was just
no doubt.
Another one that came out, the Geneva Car Show. And then I came across a very interesting thing is Mercedes-Benz has been looking at their sister company, Chrysler, the Pacifica Hybrid van, and now they're coming out with a concept EQV van, which is their Mercedes van of a hybrid van. So they're coming out with their own version here very shortly.
Based on a Pacifica body?
Probably, or? But it's a different body. It's a minivan. It looks kind of similar. And I'm thinking, well, they've already got the platform there.
Well, as long as they don't go the way of the Chevy Lumina van. You
oh,
know,
right.
The Dustbuster.
The Dustbuster.
That was just a really bad idea.
Yeah, it wasn't the Astro, which I love. So.
No. That was the one that had the dashboard that was about 4 feet deep.
Yes, and the windshield was only about two.
Yeah, the windshield was so slanted that you basically couldn't see
it. Oh, that's right.
Remember those things?
Yeah. They were going after the... Yeah, never mind.
A styling fail. Well, it looked like a Dustbuster.
Yeah, or an Annie, your pick.
Well, before the break, there's also Mercedes is coming out with a limited run of their 750 horsepower open air roadster with your 577 horsepower 516, and it's a twin turbo V8 Sprint.
Sure.
It's called the 750. So
I'm up for that. That sounds good.
Yeah,
197 nice. Miles per hour in a convertible. That's pretty cool.
I like it.
Need a helmet. Hey, glad you're with us. Coming up, we have the honor to talk with a legend in the custom car world. Daryl Starbird joins us next on Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new cartoons magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Stay with us. We'll be right back.
Okay, forest animals, kids are coming to the forest, and it's up to us to make their visit a good one. Sparrow, have you practiced the most popular bird songs for the year?
Of course.
Catchy. I like it. River, how's the temperature?
It's a refreshing 52 degrees, man.
I love it. Turtle.
He's not here yet, man.
He's late every morning. Okay. Squirrel.
The forest has been preparing just for you. To learn more about cool things to do in the forest, visit discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
This is Robert Durf with the Porsche Club of America Driver Skills Program. Thank you for listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. And just want to remind everybody that it's no fun unless it smells a little bit like burnt oil and burnt rubber.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motor work, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
My mind's out of gear, and my heart's in overdrive. I've everything to fear. I ain't never been more.
Welcome back to the second segment of Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. It's time for the windshield view, and this week on the phone with us, we at the tastefully appointed Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust Studios, a man whose name is synonymous. I knew I wasn't going to be able to say that.
You did fine.
Synonymously with the custom world. Welcome, Daryl Starbird. How are you doing?
That was a mouthful, Daryl. Oh, you there, Daryl?
Exactly.
Great. Glad to have you, Daryl. Welcome to the show.
Well, Daryl, we're having to by the way, you're down in Oklahoma, correct?
Yes, I am. Real close to Tulsa, Oklahoma, on Grand Lake, which is a large lake, and our property right on the lake itself, right on the shoreline, and we have our museum right here on it, and our home all on an 80-acre land. So,
sounds
real nice, comfortable layout.
Yeah, we took a look at the website, and it looks like it's just phenomenal. I'm quite sure that pretty much anybody, having looked at the information and the pictures on there, be happy to spend a couple of weeks just staring at your cars.
Well, to say the least, we have built a lot of unusual cars over the years.
We've
about 52 cars in our museum, so
yeah.
There's a lot to look at, that's for sure.
Well, speaking of over the years, if you don't mind, I have something I was kind of interested in now. As I understand it, you built your first car, custom car, Bexy, back in about 1954, is that right?
Except when I started my shop in 1954, yes, as a professional.
Okay,
you know, so as a regular car builder, I actually worked and built some cars when I was in high school, and just as a hobby type thing before I started the shop. But yes, that was when I professionally started building cars.
So what I was going to ask you about that? I mean, 1954. I mean, I've been around that long, although I was pretty young in 54, but. I remember the hot rod, you know, game back in the day, and, you know, the hot rods of the 50s were quite a bit different than what you see now. The custom cars then were, you know, very different. Most of them were, you know, completely handmade. There wasn't any parts available. You just kind of built what you built. So what I was going to ask you was, what was your inspiration, some of your first, you know, inspirations for starting to build custom cars? What turned you on when you were that young?
Well, you know, when I was in high school, of course, like a lot of guys, I enjoyed having a car and having, in them days, 1954, of course, back where I'm at in mid-America, so to speak, there was unheard of the custom car and the hot rod, really. So it was a whole new thing in that area. And when I was in high school, I had my first customized car that I did myself, a 41 Ford convertible. So it was kind of a unique thing in that day to have something like that. And I was one of two, I think, in the whole city of Wichita, Kansas, that even had a modified car of any kind. So
wow. That's pretty cool. Now, what kind of modifications did you do to that first car?
Well, you know, I put skirts on it, of course, first.
Of course.
And I did something I look back on now and say, what did I do that for? You know? But I put a big Chrysler bumper on the back of it and put a spare tire on the trunk.
There you go.
And a big wraparound Chrysler bumper, you know, took up the area to fill up the sides so it didn't look like it just sticking out there.
Sure.
And, of course, I put, it was in 49, so I took the centers out of a 49 Ford grill and put in a 41 Ford grill center part of it.
Yeah.
And the bullet look part of it.
Sure.
Kind of with tack oil at the end of the panel I made where the grill used to be. So that was kind of the start of it, and filled the hood and the seams and things like that.
Now that was
so
all.
That was my first effort at doing it. So.
Yeah, that was all lead work back in those days too, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we didn't have any plastic yet or putty or Bondo, whatever you want to call it.
But, yeah, that's
so we had to do the actual metal work and do leading to, you know, to cover up what areas we couldn't get perfect, hammer and welding and hammer.
And so you were saying that you were like one of the very first ones to do this. And we're talking Kansas, Wichita, Kansas, and which reminds me of that Glenn Campbell song, Wichita Lineman.
yeah, Wichita Lineman.
Yep, what a phenomenal song that is. But your work is phenomenal. And what I want to ask you is you did that first one, and then you actually came out with your first real show car. What was that one? And it sounds like there was some car shows by that time. So talk to us about that.
Well, you know, in the area, there wasn't really any real, what you call true car shows. There was a few small gatherings of guys that had cars that were, you know, slightly modified in the different cities around Wichita. But unheard of, really, doing really radical bodywork, so to speak. And so my first show car, I guess you would say, as we know of show cars today, more or less, was actually a Thunderbird. And it was a 57 Thunderbird, and I did quite a bit of work to it, custom work. And it was my first chromed undercarriage, and actually the first chrome undercarriage on any car, full-size car. And I took it to the Nationals, a national car show that was held in Detroit at that time, and it won the overall sweepstakes for that era. And my shop then, which had been, this was 49, so I'd already been in, or 59, I mean, so I'd already been in business, you know, almost 5 years when I did that first all-out show car. So, and it became a big sensation on the cover of Rod and Custom magazine, and
yeah,
chosen as the top shop of the year at that particular show. So kind of give us a kick on a national scale. So.
Now, what made you think of chroming the whole undercarriage? I mean, it's kind of a radical thing. Even now, you know, it's people do it, but it's still, that's a lot of work. What made you decide to do that?
Well, you know, my whole intention of building cars first was to do something exceptional and to do something unique and something different nobody had done before. So I had seen some. In fact, I had already done a couple of Model Ts with chrome undercarriages at that point, or, you know, Model T-type cars, hot rods, so to speak. And it wasn't too uncommon for them to have quite a bit of chrome underneath them because, you know, you see more of it and it's more showing that way.
Sure.
So I adapted those thoughts to a full-size car. Of course, the Thunderbird was the right car to do it to at the time because that was a two-place, which at that time was very few American two-place cars. So,
well, yeah, the Thunderbird
the two
and the
together just
Corvette were about it.
Off, so. Right.
Yeah. So well, now, go ahead.
I was going to say, one of the things I also noticed is you used a candy apple red, or candy paint. Talk to us about that, because how common was candy paint at that point in time?
Well, you know, not it had just started, really, and Joe Balon, of course, out in California, claims he was the first to do candy apple red paint. And when I had read about that and saw, you know, some of the stuff in the magazines about candy apple paint, I started experimenting around and to try to figure out how they made it, because they weren't being produced by anything or, you know, any paint company at that time. And I kind of come up with something real close to it, putting it over a yellow base instead of gold, and an 87H toner, which was a DuPont toner. Kind of come up with something that looked close to candy apple red, but it didn't have quite the depth or the, you know, the candy apple did have, that Joe Balon had. But anyway, in 1963, John Komosky, which started with House of Color Paint, called me up at my shop and said he was going to introduce a new House of Color Paint and manufacture candy apple red as well as other candy colors, and wanted to know if I would endorse it. And I said, well, you know, gee, that sounds great. So what do I get out of it, you know?
Well, I want you to hang on there, because we are coming right up to our break, and I don't want to miss a bit of this. So stick with us. By the way, where is your website?
It's darylstarboard.com.
Perfect. Guys and gals, go on over there and visit it. It's a wonderful site. You'll see all of his beautiful cars and his creations. So
stay right here for more Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust right after this.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
More Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust after these messages.
Attention men under the age of 35. You know what really impresses the ladies? When a guy has a few drinks and later gets pulled over for buzz driving. That could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Oh, I know. You drive more carefully when you're buzzed. You've proven that hundreds of times. A woman admires that kind of confidence. And you've practiced how to speak if a cop does pull you over. Slowly, clearly, and politely, like, "Good evening, officer." And what woman doesn't find it adorable that you call it buzzed even though the law calls it drunk? You could kiss $10,000 goodbye, along with any chance of having a girlfriend. Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving.
Hello, this is Zach with Cascade Campers. You're listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust.
I'm jumping in with my clothes on!
Most party fouls are pretty dumb, but if you decide to drink and drive underage, you could lose your license and your freedom. Learn more at ultimatepartyfoul.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration.
Listen and imagine. It takes 5 seconds to send a text, and for those 5 seconds, you're driving blind.
Life is worth more than a text.
Stay alive. Don't text and drive.
Yes, welcome back to the third segment of the show, and we're back with Daryl Starboard. Go to darylstarboard.com. And just before the break, we were talking about paint, and you were talking about the owner of House of Colors, and he came to you. Talk to us about that.
Well, actually, John called me and said he would like for me to induce a new product he's bringing out, which is candy apple paint jobs, and of all colors, not just red, but, you know, he had all different colors that he introduced, actually, and manufactured themselves. And I endorsed it, and he began furnishing paint for me to put on my cars. And at this point, I think I've painted a couple hundred cars with candy apple or candy paints, I should say, because a lot of them different colors. But they've been kind enough in all these years to always furnish all my product with candies for me. And quite a undertaking for a small thing like this starting out in all these years.
Yeah, it's
later,
a great,
still
great relationship, though,
me,
too.
So that's great.
Yeah. Well, I know that, you know, all of the big name car customizers, I mean, you know, Barris, actually, I'm happy to say I met George Barris a couple of times. He was a friend of my wife's. But you know, all of the guys that are well known, that really are the seminal figures in the industry, of which certainly you are one. They've got kind of a signature, some piece that they're known for. And I have to say, for you, it's probably the bubble tops. And you certainly have several of them in your stable. Where did the idea for the bubble top on your cars came from? You weren't a jet pilot at one point, were you?
Well, not actually a jet pilot, but I did go to university to become an aeronautical engineer.
There you go.
And actually worked while I was going to school there. I worked at Boeing, which is in Wichita, and to become an aeronautical engineer. Actually, I got 100 hours in to be an engineer and decided to drop out and start building cars and started my shop up. So,
well, who knows what could have happened, but we're glad you went with cars.
Right. So that kind of inspired me, the aircraft background, and the fact I just loved, the spacey-looking designs and so forth.
Yeah.
So it just kind of led into the bubble top. I kept thinking in my mind, if I ever get a chance to build a car, you would have to have a glass bubble top. And the next problem was how to build one. So,
yeah. What was the first car you put one on?
Actually, it was a 56 Thunderbird called a Predicta.
There you go. Okay.
Which is one of the most famous cars ever built now over the years, because it was the first bubble top car. So
where, did you have that top custom made? Did you pirate it from someplace, or how did you end up with that?
Well, actually, that's a good story, because I had to figure out some way to get a bubble and make a bubble top. I really didn't know how to do it or why, but so I started looking around and trying to figure out how to make that effect. And I was at a sign company that made plastic signs, actually. And I talked to the owner of it, and he was making me a sign for another car. And I said, I'd like to put a bubble top on my car. You know anything about how to make bubble tops? You know, so he was into plastics. He said, by the way, by coincidence, he happened to work at Bell Helicopter a few years before that.
There you go.
Bell Helicopter, if you remember the early Bell helicopters, actually had a bubble front on them, actually.
Yeah, they did.
So he explained to me kind of the process of how that was done when he worked for Bell Helicopter. But, of course, they had all the, high-dollar tooling and all that to work with, and I had my hands, so to speak. So I had to build my first tool to actually build a bubble top. I made it out of wood instead of, manufactured material, metal, and whatever they made theirs out of. But anyway, I made a tool with the same idea of blowing a bubble top. And the first one took four tries to... Well, another big problem was I couldn't find anybody with a big enough oven to heat the plastic. The plastic has to be heated at 350 degrees. It has to be evenly heated,
right,
to make it blow up even and look good. So I actually ended up making my own oven first to hang the plastic in to heat it up to 350 degrees. Well, being a homemade oven that big, because see, it come out of a sheet of 5-foot by 8-foot sheet of plastic. So I had to hang this piece of plastic inside of a homemade oven, so to speak.
Wow.
And with burners in the bottom and so forth. But I had trouble getting it to heat the plastic perfectly even all the way through. So our first three tries of blowing the top, it blew apart rather than actually forming into a bubble. But the fourth one actually came out and looked perfect, which we ended up putting on the car, called the Predictive.
Now, did you have to build, obviously, some sort of a hinge system and everything else? I mean, that was literally a from-the-ground-up build, right?
Right. And, of course, that's just a small beginning, or a very small part of the beginning of building a bubble-top car.
Sure.
You have to then, frame it and, like you're saying, make it open somehow, either electrically to the front or back open. And I did it with aircraft, not aircraft, but convertible top hydraulic pumps.
Oh, right.
Up and down the tops. That's what the first one was raised with, was that type of a lift system.
And it was all waterproof, correct?
Oh, yeah. It sealed down, and I wouldn't say 100% waterproof. Close.
Well, you weren't trying to build a submarine. I mean, as long as you didn't get rained on, you'd be all right.
All right.
That's great. Now, I saw it on the website. I mean, I know the answer, but I'm just curious. What sort of a motor did you have in the Predicta?
Actually, it had a Chrysler Hemi in it.
There you go.
392 Chrysler Hemi.
There you go.
And, you know, it actually was clocked at American or AHRA Drag Nationals in Kansas City in 1960 at 104 miles.
And moving, 1960, that was moving.
Hold on, you're breaking up a little bit.
That was definitely moving. No, it's all right. It's not you. It's probably just the vagaries of the signal. I was also going to ask, most of your cars, all your cars, I think, are drivers. I mean, I know you don't, but they're meant to be driven. They are fully functional. Did you ever build one that was just a looker that, you know, didn't have any actual guts in it? You didn't, did you?
No, I didn't do that. I always felt that, you know, a car needed to be at least as well as just looking good. So all my cars, like you say, did actually function and work. Now, I'm not saying they're 100% perfect to drive down the road 100 miles an hour, but they were as close as I could get them in those days. So, you know, started having stick steering for the first car, dual controls, things like that. That took a lot of extra engineering to make them even function, let alone be real practical on the highway.
Well, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the fact that you you had your shop, you built cars, and then you kind of moved into creating cars and going on the road with them and showcasing them. You had, two or three semi-trucks worth of cars, and you go to the different car shows. Talk to us about that, and that was all pre-internet. So everything that you did was, people would find out about you through magazines and that type of thing. So talk to us about that, that chapter of your life.
Well, actually, I met Spencer Murray, who built the Dream Truck, custom editor of the Dream Truck. And he kind of turned me on to start doing photography work on all my cars because I questioned him, how do I get my cars into the magazines, the national magazine? Being back where I was at, they couldn't afford to send people back mid-America to take pictures of their cars because all the national magazines were actually on car mags were in California at that time.
Sure, Car Craft.
But anyway, he told me to go buy a good camera and start sending him the material and he would run it. So that's how I really got started into doing the journalist part of it. And at that point, everything I did and built for anybody, I would do a do-it-yourself story, like on a headlight job, taillight jobs, any type of job that come in the shop, I'd have my camera there and I'd shoot pictures of step-by-step on how I performed whatever it took to make the change to the car. And then I would do that story about it and send it to the magazines and it would run in a national magazine that way.
I can remember
that's really
reading,
what got me started on a national level.
Yeah. I can remember reading several of your stories on a variety of things when I was building. I had a 63 Impala SS that I played around with when I was in high school. And I can remember reading in Car Craft and I think Rod and Custom, several of your articles, thinking, all right, I could probably do that if I just had more tools and some time and stuff. You know, you were an inspiration, no doubt.
Well, I did a lot of them anyway. I probably did over 100 of those stories over the years.
Oh, yeah.
And in matter of fact, right now in Car Culture Deluxe magazine, we're doing a 6-part decade story each issue for this next year here. Decade by decade of my 60 years of building cars. So, and I tell a story of how I do each decade and the cars and so forth. it's going to be in that magazine for the next 60 issues or so.
Well, that's great.
It's Rod and Customs, you said?
That's just right now.
Car Culture.
I've been doing it for a lot of years. You know?
Excellent. Well, we'll have to put a link to Car Culture magazine on our show site as well so that everybody can grab that one. That sounds like a collector series to me.
Yeah. I wanted to talk about your museum, though. And then you moved into... Okay. When did you move to Oklahoma and set up your shop and museum down there?
Yeah, we started a museum. Of course, I built my home and everything down here and moved down here from Wichita to Grand Lake, which is close to Tulsa, Oklahoma. And in 95, I actually built a big building and to start my museum. And it's right here on the same acreage as my house and shop is. I also built a shop here to build my cars in. So it's kind of a complex, all of them right here together, which is kind of a dream come true, living in a big city most of my life and working out of a shop with everything close. But here it's just kind of we're out here by ourselves, so to speak, and with a lot of freedom and, have a good time. I build cars now more for myself and for the museum and restore cars that I've managed to find that I built years ago and restore them and put them in the museum. So it's kind of a change in what I do, but I'm doing what I love most, and that's building cars. But I have produced about 400 car shows around the country that I actually produce myself. So I've had a lot of exposure. I even owned the Grand National Roadster Show in Oakland, California for about 20 years.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I've been around a lot in San Francisco, Cal Palace, and everywhere. So,
sure.
As well as all through Mid-America.
So. Is it kind of fair to say you're starting to figure out how this is supposed to work? You just about got it
well,
now, don't you?
I keep trying to get it right.
Sooner or later, yeah. I think, Daryl, you're going to have it.
So now, with your museum, is that open to the public, or is that like a private invitation? How does that work?
No, actually, it is open to the public. It's right on Route 66, over 66 going through Oklahoma.
Yeah.
And so we get a lot of traffic from all over the world, actually, falling down 66. And it's open to the public every day but Tuesday. We're closed on Tuesdays and open at 10 o'clock in the morning until 5 o'clock at night. And certainly invite anybody and everybody to come see. There's like 52 cars, about over half of them are cars I built. But it's also a Hall of Fame, and we've inducted a lot of the builders like myself and into the Hall of Fame. And so they have cars on display here also.
That's great.
So it's quite a sight to see, and it's kind of the whole history of what this is all about. So.
Yeah, I know that on your website there's some pictures of the museum, and it's marvelous. That would be definitely a pilgrimage to make, from either side of the country.
Oh yeah,
Route 66 itself is worth taking a drive on if you can. So that's a win.
Exactly.
Now you got 80 acres, so are you closer to the road than further away?
Well, actually, it goes down to the lakefront, like I say, and the highway front on the other end of the 80 acres. And the museum sits about 150 feet from the highway, but you can certainly see it from the highway. And my house is another 150 feet away from that, or 200 feet, and shops another 200 feet. So all just kind of all together right here, kind of a complex of, like I said, a dream come true, I guess. So,
well, that is
wonderful. It took me a lot of years to get there, though, I'll tell you.
Well, that is wonderful, and we're coming up to the end of our show. And, Daryl, if you wouldn't mind, we'd love to bring you back on. Would that be okay?
Certainly. Well, just tell me when and how, and we'll try to make that.
We'll set it up. I know that there's
I have
no
a ton
end.
Of questions
yeah.
I didn't get
there's
a
no
chance to.
There's no end to the
to.
Stuff that we could talk with about you, but we sure do appreciate you coming by this this evening and talking with us.
And so for
well,
more about
my pleasure. I really enjoyed it. Yeah.
Very good. Well, Daryl, thanks so much for being on with us, folks. You can go to Daryl. Starbird.com, and you can find out more about him and his his website and his beautiful cars. Check him out. Thanks for being on with us, and we'll be in touch.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Well, there we are. We'll be right back with more of the show. A great story coming up. And we got the trivia this week since Brady's back in his seat.
Back in the saddle.
Listen, as a hiring manager, I've got to tell you, the best job candidate isn't always the typical candidate. Sometimes they're a grad of life.
Meet the grads of life, young adults of unique determination and experience, an ideal fit for your company in an entry-level position, internship, or mentorship. They might not have every qualification you typically look for, but they're exactly who your company needs.
Sometimes the best candidates aren't the ones you're used to.
Go to gradsoflife.org to learn how to find, cultivate, and train this great pool of untapped talent.
Stick around. We'll be back after these words.
Hey, car enthusiast. Are you in need of a restoration and fabrication shop that turns old steel into rolling works of art? Then look no further than E-Company Customs Hot Rods and Restorations. E-Company Customs, that's Customs with a K, is the Northwest's fastest growing restoration and fabrication shop, providing frame-off restoration, custom mods, upholstery, rust repair, hand-done metalwork, motorwork, body and paint, and a whole lot more. To book an appointment, visit them at ecompanycustoms.com or stop by their shop at 15002 Suite A, Highway 99, Linwood, Washington. E-Company Customs, providing a stress-free experience to both new and returning customers.
This is Cody with Bow Wow Air-Cooled. You're listening to Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
I adopted Bento in 2010 from a shelter. A lot of people know him as Keyboard Cat.
That's just one adoption story that started at a shelter. Visit theshelterpetproject.org to find a pet near you.
When it comes to saving money, don't act like a baby.
Goo goo gaga.
Be the boss and make a budget.
I'm the boss, baby.
You're the boss of me.
I am the boss of you.
Are not.
M2.
Are not.
M2.
Need a little help?
Aren't you going to do any work?
I'm very busy delegating.
Create a personalized savings plan.
We can share.
You obviously didn't go to business school.
And get other tools and tips at feedthepig.org.
Welcome to the fourth segment of Horsepower Chrome and Rust. This is Cars Confidential, where we hear all kinds of hot rod stories. And this week, Brady has one from the old car notebook.
What a surprise.
What story do you have for us?
What a surprise. The old car notebook. Imagine us. How dare we?
Well, last week it was Harley book.
That's right. Yeah. Good stuff. And thank you for doing that, by the way. Just in case you were paying attention to last week when I wasn't here, it's because my dog got sort of semi-poisoned and I had to take him to the vet.
Yep.
But he's fine now. He's just fine. Anyway, this week's story is especially interesting if you grew up in the Pacific Northwest, but even if you didn't, you'll appreciate this one. It's called Aurora Speedway, and it's by Steve Walker, and it goes like this. On weekends, Dad would pack Mom, my older brother, Bill Jr., and myself into the Ford and drive us all to Aurora Speedway to watch the midget races. These are cars. Now, let me hasten to say, there wasn't
a bunch of
little people. It was the midget races.
Not little guys?
No. Yeah, okay. Just to the north, there was an amusement park called Playland that had carousel and roller coaster rides that Bill and I might have enjoyed, but we never knew it was there. Dad was very careful about that. There wasn't going to be any debate about where we were going. The racing was spectacular. We sat on sagging, splinter-infested speedway bleachers and ate salted peanuts, cracking the shells open and letting the remains fall through the bleachers. The air filled with the crackling and snarling sounds of the furious Offenhauser engines and the intoxicating aroma of burnt fuel and hot oil. Ah, yes. The roaring cars would slide into the turns in thick clusters, belching flames and bunching together before squirting out of the turns, separating briefly in the short straights, and then bunching back again for the next turn. Lap after lap, they stormed around the track, whipping up a great whirlwind of dust and wrappers that buffeted the crowds in the stands. The racing was close, and the drivers impossibly brave. This was before a lot of safety equipment, you know. They would tangle wheels and tumble or push each other through the plywood fence. The yellow or red flags would come out while the debris was sorted and cleared from the track and the bodies were buried and the wailing ambulances sped away. And then the race would go on until, at last, there was a winner, a victor. At the conclusion of the races, we had crossed the track and wandered through the greasy infield pit. The lushly painted cars, still boiling hot, by the way, emitted these clicks and drips as they cooled off. A rainbow of color tinted the gleaming chrome exhaust pipes, testifying to the heat that they had endured. Obviously, they've seen the pipes on my Harley because they're a lot of different colors.
Yes.
Dad knew some of the racers. We'd stop and visit, seeing their perfect gem-like cars proudly nestled in the only clear space in the middle of a tiny garage packed with tool-cluttered workbenches and shelving. I learned how exhausts were tuned in the 50s. An engine would be run up to temperature and the pipes marked for cutting where they stopped changing color. Or how the welds were checked on a frame. You hang it from a rope and striking it with a mallet. If it rang true like a bell, the welds were good. If not, you did the welds again.
Wow.
Small secrets were revealed. If square gear keys separated under the enormous torque, they could be replaced with lathe tool bits. An aluminum cigar tube with a nut for ballast could become a hydrometer, scribed to indicate fuel mixture density when floated in a soup can of fuel. This is seat of the pants engineering here, folks. I'm not ashamed to admit, we did some of this stuff when I was a kid.
Sure.
In fact, it was, well,
still do.
Well, I'm sure Shane is like, oh yeah, yeah, I got one of those in the shop right now. Dad, of course, was hooked. He wanted to go racing, but Mom would have absolutely none of it. She'd seen far too many crashes and too many ambulances carrying drivers away from the track. So with two small boys to raise, Dad was not going to be allowed to do anything quite so dangerous. So he bought a set of plans from Ted Jones, and we built a 7-liter hydroplane instead.
Oh, yeah, but that's safer.
If you happen to be in some part of the country that does not have hydroplanes, please just go hydroplane. And
were those the wood ones, weren't they? And you put the speed.
The 7 liters?
Yeah.
No, well, they were all wooden boats at that point, but they were. I mean, back in that time, they would all have been wooden boats.
But aren't those the ones you put the little outboard motor on?
No. 7 liters. Those are Corvette engines.
Yeah.
Those are
big blocks.
7 liter. Oh. Oh, yeah.
Oh, 7 liter. Okay.
Seven liter is right below the Limiteds, and the Limiteds are right below the Unlimiteds. There's only two classes bigger than that. Of course, now, you know, the turbines and everything else. But, yeah, 7 liters are frightening. You could go 110 miles an hour
like
with those.
You're talking like a 444
things.
Big block.
Oh, yeah, okay. Huge. The big Buick motors and all that in there.
Frightening.
Okay.
Oh, talking scary horsepower.
Yeah.
Wow.
They were usually V8s, and then the next class above that, that's where they started doing the Merlins and the Allisons and the really scary stuff. We're going to take this motor out of a World War II fighter plane.
Put it on a boat.
And we're going to put a boat that weighs about 1,500 pounds.
Right.
What do you think?
Will you ride in it?
And it's being held onto the water by about 8 inches of cavitation plate. There's not really anything else that holds it.
No, and
water.
That's why they called them hydroplanes, because they took the engines right out of a plane and they were hydroing across.
Yeah.
You know, speaking of
crazy stuff.
Speaking of races.
Oh, wait, before we do that, I have to say, this is, as always, from the Old Car Nut books. There's three of them. You can get them at oldcarnutbooks.com or on Amazon, and they do make a terrific gift. Thank you, David Dickinson, for letting us read them.
Yeah, well, I wanted to get this in before the end of the segment.
Yeah.
And this is, I think you guys are going to love this. Really cool news coming out of the drag racing world.
Ooh.
NHRA fans have spoken in the first round pairings of the much-anticipated Unfinished Business Series is going to be underway. Hordes of fans voted online to select National Hot Rod Association's legends will face each other at the 50th annual Amalie Motor Oil National Hot Rod Gator Nationals.
Big team.
First round matchups will be Big Daddy Don Garlitz versus Shirley Mondowney.
Mondowney?
The Professor Warren Johnson versus Terry Vance.
Oh, man.
Kenny Bernstein versus Joe Amato. And Don the Snake Prudhomme versus Ed the Ace
McCullough.
Oh, my gosh. I'd love to be there. We're not talking young guys anymore.
I just want to be the track announcer.
Yeah, no doubt.
Oh, my gosh. It's just
that would be incredible. And is this going to be a road show? I mean, are they going to do this around different places or just
in
one track?
It says fan favorite Daryl Gwynn will serve as the honorary starter at the Prestige Group.
Nice.
I think this is the kind of thing that you could actually take out on the road with.
Oh, well, the Nationals, the Western Nationals are late in August. August, and they will be at Seattle International Raceways
right.
in
this Kent. This will be at the Gator Nationals.
Yeah, so I wonder, that would be just awesome.
Oh, that would be cool. That would be cool.
All you need is some of the funny car guys then, you know, some of the old funny,
funny car guys.
Well,
yeah.
Twig Ziegler and
Pat Austin
Jim
from
Green.
Our neck of the woods. The Austin brothers could go in there.
Yeah,
and,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Get some of the old cars out.
Sure. Green Elephant Vega. Are you guys still building that thing?
Not as of right now.
You're messing with it. It's still a concept.
It's still a concept.
All right.
His health is
I was
not
gonna
the
say
greatest.
His health is yeah. not doing too well right now.
Yeah, so we're kind of on hold. See where that goes.
It'd be kind of fun to do it just
oh,
to
yeah,
say
just
you did
to
it.
Say we did it.
Yeah.
All the parts are there and everything's there to do. We just need to.
Well, I got
the green light.
I got a project. Speaking of projects,
that's
and
great.
Last week we talked about the Young Guns shoot off in the. SEMA show for young builders under 25 and under.
Yeah.
You know, I said, Noah, I was talking to Noah last night. I said, you know, I'm going to talk to Shane. We'll talk to Elton and the crew. And if we can get some support, why not take that old Crown Vic and do something completely fun with it? Not a high budget, but a low budget.
You could put a bubble
swap
top
out
on
the
it.
Engine. No, swap out the engine, put a new, more intercept engine in it.
Sure.
Put some big rims on it. Remove the paint down to what's that?
You can put some 30s on
30s,
it.
30s, yeah.
Yep.
They see me rolling.
Anyways, I'm just thinking it might be something worth thinking about.
There's a reason Steve's not doing building cars.
That would be kind of cool, though.
It would. And especially for...
I think we should just chop the top to about 4 inches.
Well, ooh, there you go.
All right, okay.
Now that... would totally change the looks of that car.
Oh, yeah, it would. Chop and channel.
Chop and channel it, and then make it a gasser.
Oh, there you go.
No, I want to be...
There's a body style for it.
Anyway.
It would be a square. Rectangle.
With monster truck wheels.
Yeah.
Now we're talking.
Then we can paint it red, call it the brick.
Should I just tell him that you don't like the idea at all?
No, wait, we're not done messing with
I
it
like
yet.
The brick.
this could be cool.
Okay, you don't like the idea.
No, it's a good idea. I think we could go with this.
I think we could have a lot of fun. I'm just talking coming in as a budget car, not something that you're spending big high dollars
that's
on.
That's why you leave the drivetrain alone and just do all the crazy body work to it.
Sure.
Nothing wrong with the motor and tranny in it.
That's true. You only have to go
85
miles an
hour. Police cars for a reason.
That's true.
Yes. All right, stay right here for more Horsepower Chrome and Rust right after this message. And this week's trivia as well.
You're into cars, you love a good time, and you'd rather build it than buy it. You might just love the Rat Bastards. The Rat Bastards Car Club is a family-oriented, non-profit organization. We believe in 1969 and older, in the rough is enough, real steel and iron, old-school, traditional hot rods and rat rods. We get together, have fun, help each other, and love to drive them. Your build is our build, because that's the way car clubs are supposed to be. The Rat Bastards are a new class of old-school, and our signature event is the Infestation every July. Find us at a cruise in all over the Puget Sound and on the Rat Bastards Car Club page on Facebook.
Hang on till right after these messages.
Hey y'all, I'm Blake Shelton. I love that country music connects people all over this great nation, but unfortunately so does something else, childhood hunger. 15 million children struggle with hunger in America. That's why the Feeding America nationwide network of food banks works to rescue our surplus food to help provide billions of meals to families in need across the country. Join the fight against hunger at feedingamerica.org. Together, we can solve hunger. Together, we're Feeding America.
Brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
In 95, I helped tow your trailer. And in 09, it was sparks from me, your chains, dragging behind your truck that accidentally started a wildfire.
Spark a change, not a wildfire. Visit SmokeyBear.com, brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service, your state forester, and the Ad Council.
This is Donnie Smith. You've been listening to Horsepower, Chrome, and Rust. Enjoy yourself.
Did you hear the news? Cartoons Magazine is back. Yep, those car-crazy comics from the past have returned in an all-new Cartoons Magazine, featuring some of your favorite artists along with a whole slew of new ones, all working together to bring you an entire magazine filled with one laugh-out-loud auto-related story after another. Bi-monthly issues are available directly through the Cartoons Magazine website at cartoonsmag.com.
Help us if you can, you're an El Camino, El Camino man.
All right, welcome back to the final segment of the show. It is number 5, This is Around the Wheel. We talk about all kinds of things coming up, rallies and clubs and movies and cruise-ins.
We got something really special
stuff
coming up, though.
We do.
All kinds of good stuff.
Talk to us about the
special
thing.
Oh, no, I can't tell you about the special thing just yet. We have to finalize
something.
Too
special yet.
Let me just tell you, there is a special thing coming up. It is a first ever event, and you will hear it here first, but I have to get it.
I can't mention it last week.
Well, it's okay. I mean, you can mention it, but it's just I can't really give you any details because we're not
okay.
quite done planning
All right.
it. So just
All
hang right. on. We'll be there. Anyway, we do have a trivia question. We are as trivial as it gets here, friends.
All right.
Last week, well, actually 2 weeks ago, last we met our heroes, we were talking about which auto badge originally included the Star of David. Now,
right.
It doesn't now. They've changed it, of course. But originally, and there's actually a picture of it. You can't really see it very well here, but because it's
a small picture.
It's golden. It about looks like a coin. There's a Star of David on it there.
Huh. Huh.
And you can't see it from where Steve is sitting over in the other night, the North 40 of our palatial studios here.
Yes.
But anyway, yeah, and it turns out that it was the original logo of the Dodge Brothers. Now, you remember, before Dodge, it was the Dodge Brothers. Cars,
right.
And that was their logo, and they only
they still have the star on the badge on the very bottom of the fender.
It is, but it's a 5-pointed star. So,
yes.
So it's the outline of where the points would be. This is actually a 6-pointed star. The Star of David is a 6-pointed.
Yeah, but isn't it
two triangles?
It's a pentagon, isn't it?
It's two triangles.
It's two triangles.
The Chrysler though is like a
The Chrysler, it's a star, but it's a five-pointed star.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. So they changed it. Actually, Linda Hamilton from Ballard sent me an email. She said, I think it's the old Dodge Brothers thing. She is correct. It was. So she gets the coveted bucket of barn fine dust.
And I do have a big, big supply of it now.
You do? Yes. Well, of course, you've been
we got the Studebaker
manufacturing.
All cleaned.
Wow.
Cleaned off the Studebaker.
Oh, gosh. It's being turned into a Muppet car replica.
What a beautiful car, though.
Yeah.
For those of you who may not know, Shane's shop has a 51 Studebaker.
It was
bullet.
Sold as fast as we got it.
Oh, yeah. The bullet nose Stude came in. It's pretty straight.
Yeah.
Oh, you already sold it?
Oh, yeah. It was sold within an hour.
Sure. Okay. Now, see, I look at that car, and I'm like, and you have a problem with my son's car?
But that's
come on.
It's being turned into a movie car.
Those things
We're
are gorgeous.
We're turning it into the Muppet first movie. They had a...
It's the car that they drove.
So we're going to do a replica.
Oh, perfect.
That's for the customer.
Did you say it's going to? Oh, the customer's already bought it.
To look like this. Tires on it.
By the time I saw the post that he put up on Facebook, it was gone.
Yeah.
It's like, oh crud.
So it'll be the new Muppet car.
Cool.
Also, speaking of notorious cars,
that's a cool tie-in.
This is actually the new trivia question for this week. Who was the most notorious fan of the early Fords? This person was so notorious, he actually wrote a letter to Henry Ford about the value of his cars.
Huh.
Now, you'll probably never guess it, but you might. If you know, you can get with us at horsepowerchromeandrust.com. Of course, you can go to the Facebook page, and you can email us at contactus@horsepowerchromeandrust.com. You, too, could win the coveted bucket of genuine chrome-plated, diamond-encrusted, radioactive, horsepower chrome and rust.
Radioactive.
Yes.
That was a short-run hit for...
radio.
No, that was Jimmy Page and Paul Rogers. They had a song called...
Yes, they did.
It was
radioactive.
Yeah.
It was a horrible song.
It was.
Which is why it was short-lived.
It was short-lived.
It was a terrible
horrible song.
The only thing good about it was that they were doing it.
Yes.
Terrible.
Which made it even worse.
Yeah. So anyway, that's the new trivia question. Please give us your help. And by the way, as long as we're pimping stuff, DarylStarbird.com is a marvelous website. Please go there and take some time. Just fold through the pictures of the museum and all of the cars. It is worth the stop, believe me. That's our cue to hit the gas till next week. Thanks again to Daryl Starbird for the conversation. Thank you for liking and following our Facebook page and our website. For Shane Osborne and Steve Johann, I am Brady Wright saying keep your eyes on the road, your hands on the wheel, and your foot to the floor. Next week, we'll pump some nitrous into another edition of Horsepower Chrome and Rust.
See you then.
Bye.